It's All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Sociologist Lindsay Freeman grew up in Oak Ridge, and as she got older, she began to wonder how her city told its own story. She noticed, for instance, that local museums exalted the people and ideas that shaped atomic warfare, but paid little attention to nuclear opposition. Her story of Oak Ridge and its struggle to present its unique history is the subject of a new book, Longing for the Bomb, Oak Ridge and Atomic Nostalgia. And Freeman says the city's unusual origins can still be felt and seen today.
I think that Oak Ridge is still very much an oddity. And even though now it's no longer the secret city in the way that it was, it's still very much a secret city, I think. And, you know, it still is this just core of scientific knowledge and, you know, homeland security and secrecy that, you know, people don't often think about today.
I'm interested in how Oak Ridge's early residents dealt with the reality of their situation, their lives at that time during the Manhattan Project. You wrote, in fact, that a security guard wrote and recorded a song called the Atomic City Boogie. There was a bowling team. There was, what, the largest swimming pool in the South or in the nation? And people had all kinds of ways of trying to put these surreal lives into some sort of a context, I guess, to get their minds around it, right?
Right, and recreation was a huge part of the town, and also dancing. There were dances every night on the tennis courts or by the lake or really any space they could think of. And so it was part of the residents themselves organizing themselves, getting to know each other. You know, people talk about it a lot as being kind of like a college campus in some ways. People from all parts of, you know, the state and the country coming together and then trying to make pretty fast friends. But it was also organized by the city itself in a way to keep the workers happy, you know, and keep the workers productive. So it was kind of a dual situation there with the recreation center of the town as being kind of a core of what people do. You know, they talked about working hard and playing hard, and, you know, it was very much 24 hours kind of place.
Even for the 40s, which I find very interesting because it's only been, I think, in more recent decades that we think of ourselves as a 24-hour society. Was Oak Ridge sort of the early test for something like that, or the earliest version of something like that?
You know, I think that we're seeing a lot of parallels with what happened in the Manhattan Project and sort of the way that people work now. Not only in terms of secrecy and security, which is a big issue today, but also in the idea of being as productive as possible, you know, and not wasting any time. And this is, of course, before any of the modern technology things that we have to distract us. But I think that this really was a test. And, you know, you hear it in the rhetoric all the time when we feel like we really need something done. We, you know, people say, oh, we need a Manhattan Project for that.
It's become sort of the symbol itself of a project that is seems insurmountable but gets done in a short amount of time in that sense.
Exactly.
Well, by its very design and its needs, the plan for Oak Ridge put it out of step with rural East Tennessee, and we alluded to this a little earlier in the interview. You had classically trained musicians, you had mathematicians, engineers, world-class minds that were put into remote Anderson County in the 40s, almost overnight. What kind of friction did their arrival create for the people who already lived here in East Tennessee? What was that dynamic like?
There was a lot of friction. And I think it's really funny, when I was doing my research, there still is some friction, you know, and people kind of make jokes about Oak Ridge and what is going on out there. But the other thing was that Oak Ridge really sucked up so many resources. You know, it was this kind of privileged node in the middle of East Tennessee. And so, you know, it was taking workers, it was taking, you know, they were buying up everything. In Knoxville, they sometimes said that they wouldn't sell their goods to Oak Ridgers because they were, quote, saving them for civilians.
Huh.
So they kind of, you know, was an onslaught into this area, and people were wary of them. They called them foreigners or sometimes invaders, and there was a lot of suspicion about what was going on there, yeah.
At one point you write, and I'll quote here, workers who arrived in Oak Ridge had been recruited in the name of freedom and democracy, yet paradoxically they found themselves inside a federal reservation surrounded by barbed wire, armed guards, and monitored gates. I would add, parenthetically, that the workers at the nuclear facilities weren't really allowed to talk about what they were doing, and in some cases a great many of them weren't really told what they were doing, except just to perform this task. You don't need to know why or how or what it fits into. How has the city come to terms with that sort of paradoxical beginning?
You know, I don't think that they have, you know, and I think it's something that people still wrestle with. But, you know, World War II was an immensely popular war, and people really just did what they felt like they needed to do. You know, and it's interesting how that mentality even bled into the next generation, which would be my mother's. And I remember talking to my uncle, and my grandfather was an atomic courier, and so he drove all kinds of secret things around the country and wasn't allowed to tell my grandmother anywhere he was going. And so my uncle, you know, he said, we never even thought to ask Dad where he was going. It's just not a thing that you did. You know, that was work, and that was separated, and you just didn't talk about it. So I really think that that secrecy was kind of some of the things that was fun to talk about in a way, to kind of talk around what was happening. But it also was very hard for people. Lots of couples talked about the dinner table being a place that used to be, you know, sharing what happened in the day, and then you suddenly couldn't say anything. So some silence crept in this kind of menacing way, too.
Was that unanticipated? Because the government was interested, of course, in getting the materials necessary to make this weapon to end the war. Were they really that concerned about how that would have an effect on people, on families, on marriages?
They were concerned for the highest level of workers, mostly concerned because of the productivity, I think, rather than, you know, sort of general quality of life kinds of things. But the houses that they put in, you know, they had fireplaces, they had porches, they had beautifully designed modern furniture. And they tried to give all these people the recreation that you mentioned. And they really tried to make life as easy as possible, the transition as easy as possible, in order for the workers to be productive and happy. Yeah, but there wasn't, you know, a lot of ideas around, you know, mental health care or social work. This kind of stuff crept in later when they realized the need for it.
Well, I'm a lifelong space geek. I've loved NASA since I was a kid, and I couldn't help but think of a parallel between NASA and, the Apollo program as an analogy for Oak Ridge. Because for both of those, the question was, what do you do once you've accomplished that one thing that you set out to do? For NASA, of course, it was landing on the moon. In Oak Ridge, it was producing uranium for those early nuclear weapons. How did the city evolve? And once that question was asked, gosh, what do we do now?
Right. Well, I think, you know, after 1945, after the bombs were dropped, there was a real kind of soul searching and wondering what would happen to the city. People were afraid that it was going to just dissipate completely. People were worried that it would lose its kind of specialness and it would be a normal city, and they didn't want that. But so after the war, the population was cut by almost a half. And many of the people who did construction work or these other kinds of jobs were laid off. And so the city kind of circled its wagons a little bit. And the people who decided to stay were very much interested in these new nuclear industries, you know, and the idea was like, okay, well, we had the bomb, but what else can we do with this new technology? So maybe it's like, what, we landed on the moon, maybe we could go to Mars, you know, what else can we do? What are the kind of peace purposes that we can use this technology for? So I think that with science, you know, that it's the moon is never enough or the bomb is never enough. There's always like, okay, well, what next?
How much of that do you think is a struggle for the survival of the city? You got to perpetuate the city, so we have to have a purpose. We got to have businesses that hire people. A very practical kind of concern. And how much of that might be more of a political or a people concern of like, ooh, that bomb thing, sorry about all that. Here, we're going to do peaceful things now. I mean, how much of that was a sort of a sensitivity to the subject?
I think that was very much a part of it. And, you know, the other thing was the Cold War started very quickly, so there wasn't much time. You know, 1946 was a real time of uncertainty in the town. And I think once Oak Ridge was granted its national laboratory status, then that gave it an opportunity to go to a lot of different directions. And I think that allowed for people who wanted to think about weapons work to work in Oak Ridge, and people who wanted to think about other kinds of nuclear technologies to work in Oak Ridge too. So even though it's still kind of focusing on the nuclear, the technologies went in two directions at once. Which in some sense, you know, diversified what the city could do.
You've called for Oak Ridge to present its own history with a more critical eye or from a more critical perspective. What would you suggest to meet that goal? What would you like to see that would sort of satisfy you in that direction?
Yeah, you know, that's part of why I wrote this book. You know, when I was thinking about Oak Ridge, and I've been thinking about it my whole life, really, I glorified the place so much. And then as I grew, I became uneasy with some of the parts of Oak Ridge, you know, which makes sense. But I'm asking for a kind of critical nostalgia because I think that there is something very special about this time and something that can be rescued. But to look at it with a little bit more nuance, and I think that the coming up generations will be able to think about this. And I think with the national park bill being signed by Obama, I think that we have a real opportunity in Oak Ridge and the other nuclear sites to kind of rethink the history or, you know, put different versions of the history beside each other so we can kind of see how they work against each other. So I think museums are a great place to start. And I think, you know, I can see the American Museum of Science and Energy really, you know, doing some fascinating things with this history in the place where it is, which I think is still really important, even in this digital age. We need the aura, you know, which is part of the nostalgia. So I think the more people are writing and thinking about it and making museum projects and these kinds of things, the better.
Well, you teach and research in Buffalo, New York now, but you're from Oak Ridge. You're from the area, and you were returning at the moment that we're recording this conversation. You're in town for the Secret City Festival, which happened in Oak Ridge. What are you hearing from the people who were either involved in the project or who live in Oak Ridge today who have read your book? What are you hearing from the folks back home?
It was so great to be at the Secret City Festival. You know, I've been going for years, and I always learn something new every time I go. And, you know, I've been researching this forever, and it's always a surprise to me. But, you know, people are kind of coming and pulling at your jacket and saying, oh, I have a story for you. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you're into this. I have a story for you. And so people seemed very excited about the book, and I think it's a really nice moment for this history, you know. And so we're losing a lot of folks from the Manhattan Project. We've lost so many already, obviously, but there are some still around. So I think kind of capturing it at this moment, people are very excited about it, and it was a thrill for me to be there.
Lindsay Freeman is an associate professor of sociology at the State University of New York, Buffalo State, and the author most recently of Longing for the Bomb, Oak Ridge and Atomic Nostalgia. Dr. Freeman, a pleasure to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great to be here.